From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Benicia.
Sunset District.
I live in Lakeside.
The Western Addition.
Diamond Heights.
Emeryville, California.
Westwood Park.
Coming up, we look at the psychology behind policing.
And I think it's common sense. It's not some grandiose idea. Man. Keep your stuff clean. Have pride in where you live. Know your neighbors. Be involved. If something gets broken, fix it.
We'll take a close look at the broken windows theory, then see what happens when we challenge it.
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to bother you. I'm just trying to actually make amends for, I think that years ago, I'm not sure, but I think my friend and I broke that window, and so I kind of just wanted to make amends for it.
You're broken?
I think so.
You're telling me now?
What's broken and how we fix it. That's today on Cross Currents. When we think of policing, we don't always think about psychology. One's academic, the other relentlessly real world. But many police departments, including San Francisco's, assign patrols based on a psychological theory, the broken windows theory. Essentially, it says signs of urban decay encourage criminal behavior. The theory was developed in the early 1980s by social scientists who argued that the way to address urban crime was to increase foot patrols and reduce signs of blight, things like broken windows. The theory is perhaps most famously used in New York City, which in the mid-1990s increased its number of beat cops and adopted a zero-tolerance policy on crime. Both former Mayor Rudolph Giuliani and Police Commissioner William Bratton backed the broken windows theory.
It is the basic tool of American policing. Every police department in America does it, always has done it, and always will do it.
Bratton was recently hired as a consultant for the Oakland Police Department. But here in San Francisco, his approach has been slower to catch on. In 2010, voters rejected a ballot measure that would have required the police department to put more cops on the street. Today, though, the SFPD is relying heavily on the broken windows theory to determine how they police high-crime neighborhoods like Bayview Hunters Point. KALW's Leela Day has the story.
At the corner of 3rd Street and Palou, people are sitting on benches in the plaza near a bus stop, laughing, smoking cigarettes, and playing dominoes. It could be a gathering anywhere except for the people standing in front of them. 7 policemen, one on a bike, others on foot, a couple of them leaning against a parked patrol car, just talking to each other. Sharif Maxi locks his car. He's here running an errand. I ask him what he thinks about so many cops being around. He shrugs.
I'm kind of conflicted with it. Some days it's good to have them around, and some days it's like we outside but we in jail. You know what I'm saying? Everything being monitored and watched upon us. And, you know, even though majority of us not committing any crimes, but it's still the pressure of having them as in police, having them behind you.
It's not just that they're hanging around, Maxi says. They're getting in his face. A few days ago, he pulled up into a housing development to visit his daughter.
I guess the narcotic division, the narc jumped out on me, ramped on my vehicle, gun drawn, weapon, and a badge hanging out, saying, freeze. I mean, what the hell I'm freezing for? You know what I mean?
He wasn't doing anything illegal, he says, even though he tells me he does have a criminal record. The police told him to stay out of trouble and pulled off. Maxie's trying to be a better example for his daughter, and he wants her to grow up in a safe neighborhood. So even if it compromises his rights, he gets it.
But I do appreciate the police, though. You know, they do come through, help us out.
A few blocks from the plaza is the Bayview Hunters Point Police Station. Patrol cars line the entrance of the building. Sitting at his desk is
Captain Robert O'Sullivan, and I'm the commanding officer here at Bayview Station.
O'Sullivan's district has the highest amount of crime in San Francisco, and it's getting worse. Robberies and shootings are up 16%, arrests up 31%, and firearm arrests are up at least 50% since this time last year. I ask him about the broken windows theory, something he's been thinking a lot about lately.
You know, a theory is a theory. To me, it's common sense. I think that when problems are small, you address them. And it's important to stay on top of things. It's important not to let things spiral out of control.
He gives me an example. A story about an abandoned, rundown building he was recently called to.
And what had occurred was there were 2 inebriated subjects, homeless individuals, that were squatting on the property. One got upset with the other, and he broke a bottle and ended up stabbing another individual with a piece of, you know, a glass shard from that bottle. had that property not been available to those individuals, officers would not have to have responded and found this individual bleeding on the sidewalk out in front. For me, it's just common sense. That was an abandoned property. It was left untended. What became one broken window became that the door came down. It then became a house, two structures on the property, three structures on the property that were literally filled with trash.
So, he says, it needs to be fixed before other buildings become magnets as well.
One broken window becomes two, which becomes four, which becomes eight.
The broken window theory dates back to a scientific experiment done in 1969. Stanford professor Philip Zimbardo took two cars and put them in two very different neighborhoods. One in the Bronx, in a rundown neighborhood near NYU. The other in an affluent neighborhood in Palo Alto, near Stanford. The cars were left with their hoods open. Within 3 days, the car in the Bronx was stripped to a skeleton. The Palo Alto car sat untouched for days. Someone even closed the hood when it was raining. Zimbardo pushed the experiment even further. He took a sledgehammer to the Palo Alto car to see how people would react. Strangers joined in almost immediately, and the car was eventually destroyed by vandals.
Police Tactics 101, you always got to have your window cracked.
I'm riding in an unmarked police car with Sergeant Dean Hall. Hall has a buzzed haircut, likes his caffeine, and smokes whenever he gets a chance.
But I see in developments when there's redevelopment or landscaping or graffiti is covered, I think it does speak to the pride of the residents and they feel better about where they live.
Hall oversees four housing authority properties on the southeast side of San Francisco, stretching from Potrero Hill to Bayview Hunters Point. We're headed for one of them as we sip coffee from a boutique cafe and talk about broken windows.
So I think that there's some validity to that theory, for sure. And I think it's common sense. It's not some grandiose idea, man. Keep your stuff clean, have pride in where you live, know your neighbors, be involved. If something gets broken, fix it.
We drive through the winding streets to Potrero Terrace, one of the oldest public housing developments in the city. We're only a few blocks away from the coffee shop, but it feels like we're in another country. The apartments look like giant stacked shoeboxes. Some apartment windows are boarded up. The paint outside is cracked and chipped. This neighborhood has a lot of gang activity, but everything looks calm right now. We continue on toward the Hunter's View housing development. The 22-acre complex overlooking the city looks a lot different.
But look at the view. There's going to be a new street that goes straight down. So there's significant improvements here. Streets, utilities, lighting, all these things, new landscaping.
A $480 million revitalization project is replacing the rundown apartments with new units. The neighborhood will soon include parks and computer centers, along with retail space.
This is the first phase of new buildings on the right. And eventually, all of these are going to be torn down, and this is going to be the new format. It's something different. It's an improvement.
Hall says he's hoping that there will be less crime when the newer units are built. But it's kind of like painting over an old building, not fixing the infrastructure, and then presenting it as a new house. In the long run, that doesn't work. A criminology study published in 2010 out of Cornell University found that changing the facade of low-income housing doesn't necessarily have any effect on crime in a neighborhood.
170 to Haro, what'd you guys get?
Hall gets a call from another unit. A car is parked on the sidewalk close by, something out of place.
This might be more than a parking issue, so we're about to find out.
We drive over and pull up near another patrol car. Two officers are questioning a man who keeps smiling at them. He doesn't give his real name. They check his ID. Turns out he's on searchable probation, so they handcuff him and search the car.
So there was a gun in that car, in that Mercedes. So he's been not forthcoming with his name, and now we know why.
Passing cars slow down to see what's going on. People peek out of their windows. Hall comes back and tells me what's happening.
Oi. So, this guy's on probation for property crimes, and
turns out the car is parked in front of the house where the man is staying. Five more patrol cars pull up. Two officers go inside to search his room. One comes out carrying manila folders overflowing with paper.
In his room, there's a lot of financial information on numerous people, which leads me to believe that there's some type of identity theft or property crime going on, and he's on probation for that. He has a significant amount of cash on him, probably several thousand dollars in his pocket.
The potential charges mount.
Looks like we have a felon in possession of a firearm, an investigation related to financial crimes or identity theft, and it all started with officers approaching a man that was sitting in a car on the sidewalk.
It's the broken windows theory in action. Something was out of place. But here in Bayview, what's detective work for some is profiling for others. The sun is setting. Sergeant Hall and I drive slowly down the street. We pass Candlestick Park and then make a U-turn to revisit all of the housing developments once more. At Potrero Terrace, we pass by some little boys climbing on rocks from a wall that's crumbled to the ground. They're playing with sticks. Hall gives them a little nod and a smile, and they wave at him. Some of them hold sticks up like make-believe guns and shoot them into the air. We drive through the Alice Griffith Project. Hall points to a small gray apartment. It looks empty, with trash and broken toys in the yard. He says that apartment was recently shot at. The owner is now in one of the new housing units.
I think it's common sense. If it's newer and it's fresher and there's more landscaping, it's broken window stuff, you're like, hey, this is nice. I want to take care of this. And we would hope that, and that's what we want, right? Everybody wants that. Cops, right. Residents, citizens, everybody.
Some argue that the broken windows theory does just that. It assumes that we all want the same sort of environment, where order reigns. Graffiti is painted over, abandoned houses torn down. And to some extent, anyway, it works, though it might take away freedoms from some. What the theory doesn't do is consider why the windows are broken in the first place. In Bayview, Hunters Point, I'm Leela Day for Cross Currents.
What do you think of the broken windows theory? If you want to share your thoughts about this or police presence in your neighborhood, call us at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Sometimes when you see a broken window, you can be pretty sure how it got that way. Kids have a fascination with breaking things and seeing what happens next. But kids don't always think about the consequences of their actions. And that's what we're going to hear about in our next story, when two young girls unexpectedly test the broken windows theory. This piece comes to us from producer Roman Mars from 99% Invisible.
My name's Melissa Lee, and originally I'm from Hastings-on-Hudson, New York.
That's a small town. I suppose you have to make your own fun.
Everybody makes their own fun. If you don't make it yourself, it ain't fun. It's entertainment.
I guess the big activity would be walking downtown after school, and you could hang out by the wall and watch people that you knew go by.
So not a lot going on in Hastings-on-Hudson, New York.
It's about 2 square miles, but it's right outside New York City, so it's sort of like, you know, there's a lot out there to do, but there's not actually a lot to do right where I was.
Besides people watching, Melissa and her friends would also collect geodes.
We did collect geodes, yes.
You know about geodes, right?
Break your own geodes.
The rocks are brown and lumpy on the outside, but when you smash them apart,
inside would be some crystalline structures. And you have no idea from the outside what you're getting. So you kind of have to take a chance on it, that inside you've got something great.
Usually Melissa and her friend Liz would buy a few geodes at the store downtown and take them home and smash them apart with a hammer. But one day, when Melissa was 13...
we were too impatient and we just had to know what was inside. There was a parking lot nearby and with an apartment building, and we decided to just throw it against the side of the wall as hard as we could and hope that it would crack open that way. And I think that was the first time that we had tried to open them that way without a hammer, just by throwing it. So I threw mine a few times, and finally it did crack open against the wall. And Liz kept throwing hers, and it wouldn't crack open. There was only one little window in this whole back of this apartment building. My friend Liz kept throwing hers, and
just a big expanse of brick.
And Liz kept throwing hers, and it wouldn't crack open. So I threw mine, and we saw it going towards the window, and then
I mean, it felt like it was slow motion.
her aim just went wild, and we're kind of like, no. Then the geode
went through the window.
Breaking the glass and shattering it everywhere. We heard this huge crashing sound. Glass had broken and was now lying all over the parking lot floor, and the geode was inside. My first reaction was just pure, full-on fear. I hated doing things wrong. I hated getting in trouble. And I just got that terrible sinking feeling in my stomach, and I just wanted to get out of there. We were such good kids. I mean, this is what we did for fun. We broke open geodes. We never did anything wrong. And now we had committed this heinous act. And it was sort of like the quintessential wrong thing that kids can do. I mean, I always saw, you know, TV shows or read comic books where kids would break a window.
I get it.
And then they were faced with a dilemma. Do they go back and tell the guy that they did it or not?
Hey, let's get out of here.
We froze for about 10 seconds. And then my friend Liz ran forward. She reached into the broken glass and grabbed the geode, and we both ran. After initially running, some sort of moral compass started up, and we realized that we had to go back and we had to find this person and tell them what we did.
Melissa and Liz went back to the apartment building.
And we tried to figure out where the window led to. But when we went around to the front, it was very confusing which door might lead to that window. And so we knocked on a few doors. Everyone whose door we knocked on said that it wasn't their window. You know, we probably did that for 10 minutes. And then I think we were like, well, I think we did all that we can do. And we were probably really glad that we tried, but we weren't able to find out whose window it was in the end.
Still feeling guilty, Melissa avoided downtown and the window for a couple of months, which wasn't easy in a small town.
I thought that we would just go about our business and somebody would fix the window and I would never have to think about it again.
But when Melissa finally did go back to the window, it was still broken.
Like a cartoon, just like a, you know, jagged edge hole that was sitting there. Even the glass shards that had fallen into the parking lot were still lying there. It was pretty much like in pristine condition from the day that we had broken it until months and months later. It stayed almost exactly the same.
It was clear that the apartment was occupied.
Actually, we could see a TV on inside sometimes, so we knew somebody did live there. And sometimes the window would be raised up or lowered down, so someone was moving this window around, but the hole was always still in it. We just could not even imagine who this person was that wasn't doing anything to fix this window. They weren't even putting tape over it. And we'd even go by in the winter and see that the hole was still there.
The window stayed broken as Melissa finished middle school, then finished high school.
It just hadn't gone away like I wanted it to.
Then went away to college.
And I was shocked to find that it was still broken, even after I'd left town.
And this became the pattern for Melissa. She'd go away, do some growing up. But when she came home, she'd see that window and feel exactly like the 13-year-old kid she was when she broke the window.
When I think about 13, that's like my most awkward, horrible age. The sight of this window would just bring me right back to feeling like a middle schooler again.
Melissa is 36 now. Think of all the milestones you pass between 13 and 36.
I went away to college for 4 years, and by the end of that, I felt pretty grown up.
Came home, saw the window, felt like a 13-year-old.
And then after that, I traveled the world for 9 months.
Came home, saw the window, felt like a 13-year-old.
I went to graduate school.
Came home.
I moved to Washington, D.C.
Saw the window.
I got married.
You get the idea.
As much as I was changing, this part of my past was completely frozen. As soon as I saw the window, I was just brought right back to those middle school days when we had broken it.
So in 2011,
when I'm about 35 years old,
22 years after she and her friend broke the window,
I decide to find out once and for all whose window it is and apologize. And I guess, you know, offer to pay for it as well. Now I'm recording this time for real.
I don't want to be mean to you.
So I go downtown with my sister accompanying me for courage. The hole is still there in the window. And my heart is beating so fast.
Should I just say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. I believe that, like, I know who broke that window.
He's right there.
Okay.
And I very, very nervously blurt out,
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to bother you. I'm just trying to actually make amends for, I think that years ago, I'm not sure, but I think my friend and I broke that window, and so I kind of just wanted to make amends for it.
You broke it?
I think so.
And you're telling me now?
Well, I actually tried to find you at the time, and I couldn't find you, and then 20 years later, I came back to my hometown. I left, you know, I haven't been back since then, and basically, that's what happened. So I just wanted to kind of find out, you know, whose it was. And
hi, Dina. How you doing? Good. She's been looking for me 20 years. She just said she found me. You believe it? For 20 years.
Well, I left town for a while. But he didn't want to talk to me. He thought it was amusing that I was now fessing up. And when I offered to pay for it, he said...
window? No, don't worry.
No. I'm surprised.
It's been like that so long.
I know. Well, why did you just decide to leave it like that? Get a nice breeze in the back there?
The landlord was supposed to fix it.
The landlord had never fixed it.
He never did. Well, he was looking for a person that did it.
And when I offered to pay for it, he said no, that he'd gotten used to it. He just left it.
I grew into that broken window, you did. In fact, I love it. I wouldn't get it fixed for nothing.
Anyway, I'm sorry, but I'm glad that you've come to like the broken window. My name is Melissa, by the way.
Okay.
Thank you. It was nice to meet you after all these years. I've wondered about it.
That's kind of an understatement.
Whatever it was that was keeping me, you know, stuck in middle school there was sort of keeping him stuck with this broken window. And he just was content to live with it.
The broken windows theory proposed in 1982 says that a seemingly small act of vandalism, if it goes unfixed, can precipitate further vandalism and even more serious crime. That really didn't happen here, except for Melissa's life on the lam for 20 years. But the broken window did weigh on Melissa, and I'm guessing it affected the man in the apartment more than he's letting on, and a random passerby less so, and Hastings-on-Hudson, New York soldiered on without missing a beat. Architecture is personal. The strangest part of our interaction with the built environment is what can be so evocative and meaningful for you can mean absolutely nothing to someone else.
This time when I was in town, I just didn't really even... I think I was even in town for a few days before I even thought about the window. I didn't really even wonder about it very much. And then in the end, I didn't even go down and look.
That was Melissa Lee sharing her story with 99% Invisible, a project of KALW produced by Roman Mars and Sam Greenspan. Listen to it on our website, kalw.org. That's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Tiffany Kamhai, Jen Sheehan, Audrey Dilling, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Megan Quintana, Ben Vu, Marco Choi, Chris Hoff, Judy Silber, Ray Sue Sussman, Alyssa Kapnick, Stephen Short, Leah Rose, and Melanie Young. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Holly Kernan is our news director. Also, thanks to you. KALW is independent, listener-supported public radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll visit a writing program at San Quentin State Prison and hear inmates read from their work.
I am Oscar Grant. I am Hadia Pendleton. I am Sandy Hook Elementary. I am Trayvon Martin. I am Michael Butler. I am you.
Identity Behind Bars. That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. The music you're hearing is by the Bay Area blues band Delta Wires. You can hear them this Friday at the Saloon in San Francisco, starting about 9:30 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Treffner.
Till this morning, I was too tired to shake. I got a good poker hand, too tired to win. And my baby calling, too tired to let it in.